Well, good evening, everyone. We're in the middle of the precepts. That's always interesting. And I feel the more we focus on them, the more they seem like one thing. Just saying the same thing in many, many different ways. And certainly that's true about this one, which is number 6, which, as usual, has lots of different translations of what it is. However, basically, our translation says, no speaking of past mistakes. See the perfection. So, Dido says is, see the perfection. Do not speak of others' errors or faults. So they have, Koban's way is to talk about the seventh almost entirely as like the first, like the sixth. So that speaking of past mistakes and blaming self and praising self and blaming others all are conflated in a lot of discussions about these things. So in both cases, it's about self and other. Our mistakes are all based on speaking of others' mistakes is comparison. And what we do almost invariably from a very young age, possibly because we're encouraged to do it, is to compare ourselves, that look at little Johnny, isn't he's better than you at such and such, you should be like that. Or Sally got all A's, what's the matter with you? And the more we're infused with this kind of judgment, it becomes a part of our own mind. Then we begin to check ourselves. How did it work out this time? And look at that guy, he's not doing well. And in everything I've read about it, this is people are taking this, teachers, as indicating what happens in sanghas. When sanghas all gather in more intimate situations than we usually do, when people are living together and practicing together, issues come up strongly and painfully because everyone's trying to live up to the precepts. Everyone's trying to do a good job. And inevitably, we see how we fail or how we shore up our own self-image by imagining that we're a whole lot better than somebody else. Or maybe even everybody. But it's just as painful to imagine that we're worse. That's just as incorrect. It's a mistake of the situation. And that's the essence of all of these, is that we posit a separate self, separate from us, that's different in some sort of fundamental way. That Charlie is magnificent. Not like I could ever be. We can't know anything except from here. This place. And in this place, what we know, if we practice a lot, is we begin to understand and experience how, even though Charlie is totally different, that he's a part of the whole thing that I'm a part of. I often always say that it's like being in a soup. You know, the soup is the good stuff, and we're all making it delicious. But Charlie is a carrot, and I'm an onion. And you're a piece of parsley, and you're some thyme, and it gets to be better and better. It's a lovely soup. But it's just one soup. So there's no way to measure, ultimately, although we love to do it. And the whole self-notion, the whole notion that there is a self that needs to get polished up and be all better because it's not better, or a self that is so superior to everyone that it's riding for a fall, as we say in English. It's the rider who's letting the horse just leap and run without it, as recklessly as he could be, and always it goes. So, speaking of Dido says sometimes it's necessary to speak of someone's errors and faults. So, but he says when you see a murder happening, you need to tell somebody and be completely honest about it, and not protect the one who did it. If you speak of others to inflate your sense of self and to elevate your self-importance, you break this precept. So it's about speaking, and it's about knowing the self. The seventh is realize the self and other as one. So speaking of past mistakes and comparing ourselves, and realizing that there's just this one, that we don't have to do that complicated exercise of navigating our way through this complicated, trying to live up to somebody else's standard. We need to develop our own standard and be as balanced and clear in our mind as we can. All of these precepts are about helping us to clarify how we think. Coben says, the spirit of this is thinking before speaking or acting. It's important to speak with fine tuning and with truth from within. And that's the point, to speak with the truth within, to see things with the truth within, to see with total honesty. And he says the true loving quality which appears with words is necessary if we wish to relate with other people. So that's the other piece of this, is that loving quality if we have to speak. We speak so quickly without thinking. And we speak based on our judgments, without considering, without even imagining that we have come to a judgment. We just think we know, because everybody with that kind of haircut is a certain kind of person. And so, dot, 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 we think she's dot, dot, dot. We think we know based on very, very faulty judgment. So, Thich Nhat Hanh's instructions about these things is to stop. Stop and just give it a little space and time, so that we're not leaping in our mind into one kind of idea and the next kind of idea. Most of the grief in the world comes from the speed of our conclusions before we really know what's going on. So many terrible mistakes are made. So Dogen said, don't permit haphazard talk. Don't just babble. Or tweet, or gossip, or complain, or all of those things. Just sheer negative thought and speech has such a damaging effect. It's a downer on everybody's mind. As I often say, we can just create a tremendous difference in the world just by walking down the street with a little smile on our face, with a kind word. It doesn't take much. And these precepts are so helpful in that regard. I'm often in groups where people will suddenly stop their conversation and say, oh, we're gossiping. They suddenly notice that, oh, we're gossiping. We're saying too much. Things we don't even know. We should stop. So being able to see this is the whole point of the precepts. See it while it's happening and do something. So it's your turn now.
Share, but I'm pretty sure I messed this up this week, because I realized only just now that I misinterpreted and I left out the other, and I was considering it as, for some reason I was considering this, don't think or speak, I didn't even remember to speak, it was much more about letting go of past mistakes, and I kind of worked on that, and it was really powerful for me.
Good.
But I knew I should have said it, because then I would have been reoriented. But my,
well, it's a little confusing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what did you discover?
Well, I just kept on thinking, this is the most powerful precept. Because it is so. I was thinking it was pointing to the concept or philosophy or whatever about not so much that we don't really have to purify ourselves,
mm-hmm.
but that we need to see and accept what we are.
Exactly.
So
yes.
And so lots of over the week and especially in the last couple of days work on that and realizing or even flashing back to my dad handing me this at this age, I guess it must have been high school, where I guess there was not a lot of acceptance about who I was and maybe a lot of effort on their part to make me something other than I was, and so a lot of messages about who I need to be, etc. Anyway, and then he handed me something, and I was like, oh, this will explain it to you. And it was this article, someone, you know, went off on how guilt is a good thing, and it helps us recognize where we might be wrong, you know, but it was even then I realized this is heavy shit, you know. And it just made me, and you know, I have done so much work trying to work on this stuff with my dad, and you know, like a breath therapy, talking therapy, this grief therapy, you know, all this. I was just working, you know, I just want it out of my system. And I, every time I think, oh, I've cleared this, you know, I'm good to go. And even today, something happened where I was trying to get to De Anza College, and I didn't know where it was. And I always get a little weird on the freeways. I didn't leave myself enough time, so I'm trying to call, of course, on the freeway, trying to look up this email with the directions and blah, blah, blah. Got myself into a frazzle, and then suddenly all this comes up about, you know, if there was more support, I wouldn't be such the mess I am, you know.
You wouldn't be lost.
Kind of conditioning, I wouldn't be, you know, I wouldn't be messing up all the time. It was just really just on myself, you know. And but also with blame, you know. And anyway, I decided after calling home that it was best I just come home. And I came home and I realized I can't go into the house. I went to the garage and I was so mad. I looked for a stick and I shuffled around for a stick, and I had this flashback of my being in the basement with my dad, and he was shuffling around for a stick that he could spank me with. And he was trying to find the right one, and I don't even give the wrong impression. My dad wasn't a physical abuser most of the time, but at this time he was told that this kid needs a spanking. I was too old for this, you know, and it was just weird to be down there with him. He was not present. He was not himself, and he was doing what he thought I should do. He was being so thoughtful about this stick, I'm going to give you a spanking, you know, and I was just like, and, you know, but anyway, and today I was just wacky, so mad at him. And then, anyway, once I got this out of my system, I felt like I could go in my house and be around my sensitive creatures that live at home, and not have a very post-traumatic syndrome, stress syndrome dog, and same with the cat, and whatever, you know. And it just felt like, I don't exactly know what I'm trying to say, but I guess I just feel like I know this practice is pointing to letting, you know, not having guilt so much as, and also pointing to don't blame your dad, you know, and all these things, but I'm still a process.
It is a process. Well, yeah. Practice brings up things like that.
Yeah.
Practice does, because you start to really look at what did happen, the past. And the past is a real important subject, even though it's gone.
Yeah.
It still lives on. And it lives on often with a flavor of trauma. If we've been really, really hurt, that hurt stays with us. It's in us. And if we don't recognize it, then we are living in a cloud of confusion and always reacting to things in a way that reflects that without telling us what it is. So the more we know, even though it's painful to know, it's extremely helpful, because we can begin to recognize and work through the things, see them and say, yes, it happened just like that. Not the way I wanted it to, not the way it could have been, it might have been, but damn, it was just like that. And because of that, something gets unlatched in our mind, the road gets opened up, and we can keep going. It'll still be there somewhere, but it doesn't have the power that it has when we suppress it. Cool. Thank you. Ron?
Well, these things have to come out somehow. I went through very similar things due to, you know, relationship with a parent who was pretty negative in general. You know, it took me 20 years. I think I pretty much worked through it. But just the way it is, I kind of like the one phrase I read in the poem. It's a Chinese poem. Basically, the phrase is, don't regret the mistakes of the past. Know that in the future, you will, it's hard to translate, you will be one with them or something like that. That's probably very vague. But then it made me think of another lecture on karma, given by somebody, Reb, you know, and we're talking about, well, what's the whole point of a lot of the stuff we're talking about, you know, not being so, the way we look at something, right? Don't make distinctions, right? So this is all related, one way to look at it, but it's another instance of the type of thing where we are always kind of, in our mind, we're going to say, oh, my dad or my mom was just so mean, you know, or my boss was so out of line and made me suffer, so. But, you know, if we kind of look at don't make distinctions, then another way is like, okay, break myself in this habit of judging others and judging, even judging myself, not just others. All this stuff that was messed up. It's bothering me so much. Just don't, you know, build it up into this big, serious, traumatic thing, and don't create new karma on top of it. You know, just let it go. Judge it so that you're making more good karma.
Yes.
But that's not easy to do at all. Or maybe it is easy.
It takes a lot of work.
Not easy for me, for sure.
It takes intentional work. It's really developing the intention in the first place.
Yeah.
developing an attitude that it's important to do it, and then it's not so hard. But if we're always going against the grain of our own mind and saying, well, it's too hard, then we won't do it.
We can't change it. You know, we can't change the way other people are and the way they were and the stuff
right. That
they may or may not have done to us. But we can control to some extent how we
take things.
Think about it or deal with it. Mm-hmm. It's a very interesting process.
It is. It is. Paul?
Well, I grew up as a twin. So we always had comparisons. If I didn't do good for good, or if I did better in the grade, either our parents would mention it or we'd talk about it themselves. And it was forever,
yes.
While we were going to school. And then finally,
twins, right?
Gave it up. So they're going to be that way. We don't have to be that way. Probably.
So you and your brother just made a pact?
Yeah.
Forget about it.
He meditates too.
Yes, I know.
We both realized that this is silly. This is not our life. This is their life.
Bravo.
It only took 20 years. You know, it was overnight. But, yeah. And, of course, the more I sit, the more I'm opened up to very similar stuff. And I've spent some time pounding on pillows and things, too, because this is part of the, quote-unquote, old me. And the more I become unattached to that, the more clear I am about what's happening in the present. And I'm not drugged back into the old reactive way of doing things. But it's, as she says, a heck of a lot of work. But it's worth it. It's definitely worth it.
Thank you. Wisdom words. Bree?
So I'm curious about how you do ease a karmic situation, maybe? So, you know, my recent situation, I went and apologized to someone whom I had hurt. I gave a month of space and then I apologized. And and I said it wasn't my intention to hurt you. And the response was, yes, it was, and you're completely full of shit. Mm-hmm. And you're a fraud. I know you're a fraud. You know you're a fraud and you're evil. And so I said, you know, thank you for letting me know what your experience of me is, because that seemed like the least resistant thing to say.
Yeah.
You know? And I said goodnight, you know? And, this particular situation that I'm in, I feel kind of helpless in terms of turning it, because there is no, it doesn't seem to be openness on the other, you know, the part of the other person to.
There are a lot of certain circumstances like that, uh-huh, that can't be turned. Uh-huh. And it doesn't have to be. It's just the way it is. Uh-huh. I mean, everything we're in is just the way it is, and some of it we can work with from as much wisdom and loving compassion as we have, and do our very best and still bang up against a wall. Mm-hmm. And then we bow to the wall. If it's a dangerous wall, then we report it to the police so it doesn't hurt anybody else. But if it's a hurtful one that's legal, then you just get out of the way of it. Mm-hmm. It's really all we can do. And just acknowledge that some things are apparently harmful, at least to us. We have been feel harmed. And we have to acknowledge that we don't like it and we don't like the person. But that doesn't mean we're going to make it all better. Mm-hmm. And in the end, we can acknowledge that that person is another aspect of ourselves. That we too have some very ugly places. Mm-hmm. And that it's best just to acknowledge and accept it for what it is. Mm-hmm. Like Paul and his brother accepting the parents. They're their way and we're our way. Mm-hmm. It's really up to you. You can be the good person that you are. No blame, just some sorrow. Mm-hmm. It's sad. Yeah. And that again is a social, a more intense social situation where there's a lot of crunchy people stuff that goes on in a place like Chikoji. It's just inevitable. It's harder to stay cool and harmonious when people are so incredibly different and people's intentions are different. Because it's America and people are coming from so many different directions. I think it was easier for Dogen and his monks, because they were all Japanese and they all spoke the same emotional language, and we don't. We just don't. We're all so different. So I think we bow to some of the ugly parts that are hard to take and just let them be. Thank you for sharing that. See, my watch was telling me.
You just have to carry Angie around with you all the time. All the time it is.
I'll come. Are there announcements?
Well, I hope everyone has the 20th of May on your calendar for our one-day sit up at Connie's homestead up on Summit Road. All this a beautiful experience to meditate in nature.
I'll be gone the next Tuesday, not this coming Tuesday, but I'll be gone the Tuesday after, and Jill will be coming to wonderful teacher, sewing teacher. She's been teaching Judy and Yap and Ellie and Wendy and Hisayo, and she's taught a lot of us. And she's one of Misha's only senior student, transmitted student. And is a very fine teacher. I'm glad you'll have a chance to meet her if you haven't. And I'm going to my son's wedding.
Oh.
So it's all a good thing. I'm going to Austin and San Marcos, which is where they live, and it will be a wedding in the backyard of two people who've been together for a couple of years and have teenage kids who like each other and are really nice. So it should be a lot of fun. But I'll be here next week. And why don't we talk about no hoarding materials or teachings? that mean? One minute, sit.